I am delighted to welcome Joy Willow to the stage of Many Rivers Books and Tea. I know her face from many years as a customer and a supporter of the store. That is enough to make me wish to welcome her and for this first event of January 2015. But also, she has this book to read from tonight, Soma Song. And as an archaeologist, in her self-description, when she mentions that she is living on land recently discovered to be the home of ancient peoples from 7,000 years ago, my ears prick up. Mm-hmm. So I am looking forward very much to her reading and the dispensation of her generous energy here in the store tonight. So thank you so much, Joy. Welcome to Many Rivers Books and Tea. Please join us.
Thank you very much, Rob, and thank you, Jim and John, and all the wonderful energy here at Many Rivers. It's always been a fun stop for me when I lived here to come and peruse. And I'm so honored to see so many of my friends and neighbors, half of Murphy Avenue from the 90s here. And I'm honored to share with you some of my work. Many of you have read this book, so never fear, I'm going to be reading some recent things too. But this book was published about a year and a half ago from Word Project Press, and it culminated a lot of work. It was the first time I had done anything quite so ambitious, and now I'm ready for the next one. So I don't know when that will happen, but the first poem I want to read to you is about a sense of the culture. I want to kind of talk about the culture we live in right now. It's crazy out there. Not just our culture, but just everywhere. And I'd like to read a poem that I wrote 2 years ago, at the end of 2012, when we thought the world was going to come to an end at the end of the year. It's called Unwritten Poem. I want to write a poem about the end of the world, about the end of recorded time, at least according to the Mayans, about the stillness of solstice and falling off the cliff of what used to be solid ground. I will write this poem unless stopped by a shooter randomly projecting his neurosis onto innocent ones going about their day at the end of the world. Or unless stalled by a malfunction of some vital organ, or unless hit by a bus. Can I write this poem about the downfall of civilization, the collapse of verbal communication, common sense, and caring? Can I document a distracted society shaking with addiction's tremors, staring into the eyes of its own demons, its own projected panic? Can I footnote this poem with references to the literature of symbols and the technology of the sacred, all the keys, graphs, and maps that got us here to this day when it was, all of it, predicted to end? In the dark hours before dawn, I lie very still, on my back, hands folded across my heart, and listen carefully and long for the softest whimper that signals the sound of the last day of the world. Instead, I hear broken voices reporting gunshot rampages ricocheting around the world. I hear the wailing of women and children as they cower and scatter like deer. The bang and the whimpering are both heard throughout these longest nights. Stop. Enough. The world cannot continue this way. As the earth turns from new moon to full, as the baby suckles his mother's breast, as the young cattle romp and feed in fertile pastures, as the fires of winter burn old wood and warm our frozen hands, as the snow blankets the brown fields, as we lie still in the December night, hands folded across our hearts, perhaps if we are quiet enough, we can feel the waters breaking, the drawing together that signals delivery through the labyrinths of agony, pushing forth a new being, a new world, its round head just beginning to crest, its first cries already in the air, its eyes still closed to the brilliant translucence that awaits its arrival. No, I cannot write a poem about the failing of the world, but I can listen attentively and welcome that which is arising. So that's a poem of hope, in spite of everything. And the next one is a result of my musings and ruminations about this institution called Social Security. What is secure about society? What is permanent about people? Humans stammer a language of division when right outside the door, nature is humming a song of completeness. We are solitary creatures, born alone, dying alone, experiences that are ours alone. As infants, we are fully content with the self-generated sounds and movements, with the play of shadows and light, with the layered symphony of calls and twittering from unseen creatures. Until some need moves us to cry out, we are happy alone in our world. Until we are taught social skills and learn to relate and desire a tribe, then this cup of familiar brew is laced with a powerful spike of hormones, which will drive us right through the next several decades, which will drive us until we open the door, take a long, slow walk, amazed that we could have feared and forgotten this delicious aloneness. Not every warm summer moon needs to be shared. Many who outlive mates will contribute the stories of separation as well as their tales of awakening. There is a hunger for this wisdom, and so we willingly support the drift into age, sending the message, elders are still a valued part of the tribe. Aloneness and society, like yin and yang, do a spiral dance, leaving a paper trail for future generations. This is called No Grammar Here. At her desk, with freshly sharpened pencil, the fourth grader bends eagerly to the curious task of labeling subjects and verbs, circling prepositional phrases, marking modifiers, parsing conjunctions and exclamations. After all, this is grammar school. And like a careful archaeologist, she separates and analyzes, discovering the thrills of linguistic structure. But wait, she senses that lightning strikes, steam rises, cats purr, and arms reach out from a gathering of invisible activity with subject and verb inseparable. She sees that the thing is what it does and does what it is. How strange that names can carry truth yet also imply their opposite. Ocean, no ocean. Me, no me. You, no you. God, no God. When so defined, things just seem to cancel each other out. Maybe things aren't really things at all, but energies appearing and disappearing like magic, like breathing without clear edges. The child learns to speak a language of locality. This is here, that is there. She learns the rules of writing and the craft. The poet uses words to point beyond the words, beyond the prison of the sentence and the confines of syntax. She uses grammar fluently, yet knows there can be no grammar here. as Rob spoke about my land and how they found this graveyard with these 7,000-year-old bones in preparation to do a widening of the road, and I just felt so even more blessed and grateful to be living on this land, caretaking it. And I think that dig is also a metaphor for what happens when you live on quiet land, beautiful land, treed land, and you live alone for a long time. There's something about excavation that happens that has definitely been what I've been spending nearly a decade doing up there. So this was written a few years ago, but it's called Excavation. Let's see if we can do this without spilling. Peeling the layers of a life. Uncovering the construction of a psyche. First an exfoliation of obvious dead skin. Easy work. Shining result. Then the more tedious tasks of sensing, removing, examining separate layers of separation, isolate particles of darkness, conglomerate areas that need a pickaxe, a layer of muscle, a layer of nerve, evidence of waste, fur, tooth, and whisker. Constant, slow erosion of the comforting and the familiar. Relentless digging, which now can't be stopped. But we are here, deep in Earth's discovery grave, the sounds of daily life receding into the distance. Perhaps we will find the 7,000-year-old carbon-dated bones, and perhaps succeed in living close to the bone, stripped to essence, wrist bone flexed, carrying water, shin bone split, chopping wood, hip and spine intact. Perhaps we will celebrate this find and emerge to join the animate world. Or perhaps we will stay down here and wait. Wait in a queue. Wait for the end. Wait for the waters to flow. For the change that will surely come. So I promised you some new things. Last year I wrote Drinking Tea on New Year's Eve. And I thought since I'd be probably drinking tea and it would be near New Year's Eve, I should do this piece. Dropping back over and over into a textured silence, a gentle expanse of breathing. We hold the steaming cups with both hands, caressing the smooth, simple grass-green ceramic. We sit quietly together in the still air of early dark, dropping back once again without many words. We rest and mark the shift into a new year. The quiet feels alive with change, with an easy togetherness. A few phrases slip from our lips without intention, dropping like light into the corners of the house, disappearing unremembered. We keep the space open by not looking at it directly, by not needing anything from the moment but this dropping back over and over into an improvised love, into this warm sip of tea. called A Congress of Birds. A milky white backdrop for this morning meeting is the mix of a glaring late December sun and the smoke from wood fires in the valley. Bare branches and leaning trunks crisscross the space, punctuated with dark green leaves and the raw sienna puffs of oak galls clinging to the bark. It is early, quiet, and pristine. But in the near court, the action is swift, when a pair of well-fed robins and a bossy blue jay commandeer the area around the feeder, chasing away the smaller red finches and the nervous nuthatches. The jazzy juncos seem oblivious as they safely ground feed. Perhaps they can't see too well out of those dark hoods. It will be interesting if the troops of white-crowned sparrows arrive. Meanwhile, my cat and I watch the drama unfold. All this fluttering, hopping, and vocalizing with occasional swooping ribbons of dark flight into the upper branches. Is there agreement here? Some subtle compromise? Robert's rules of order? Have any laws been passed at all? Or is it like those fat cats in Washington whose bickering and twittering signals the deep chaos out of which our country inches its way forward on the slim branches of Congress? Those birds are sitting pretty, fed by the salaries of you and me. Yet they still rule the seed feed and flit about on the wings of our collective naivete, feathering their own nests and trusting their young to see the forest as well as this particular tree. The sun gains on the day and the feeder is empty. Maybe they're off playing golf. Or maybe it's a total avian government shutdown. Or maybe it's a pause to remember the light in a season of peace. The next piece I'd like to do is called the form is called a pantouim. And what it is, it's a rhyming quatrain of four lines. And the second line has to become the first line in the next quatrain, and the fourth line has to become the third line in the next quatrain. So it's a little challenging, and it all has to rhyme. So I've been writing a few of these, and this one I wrote for my sister, and it's called Wabi Sabi Eyes, and I'm sure all of you know Wabi Sabi means simple, natural, earthy, somewhat, not glitzy, not perfect and shiny, and manufactured, very organic, and so that's my sister's eyes. Wabi-sabi eyes, gray, blue, green, changing hue with what is seen. Gray, blue, green, reflecting the light with what is seen at the edge of night. Reflecting the light, unadorned, at the edge of night, at the hem of morn. Unadorned, natural eyes, at the hem of morn, wabi-sabi eyes. Natural eyes, at ease with space, wabi-sabi eyes, simple gaze. At ease with space, intimate seeing, simple gaze, mirror of being. Intimate seeing, private eyes, mirror of being, softly kind. Private eyes, lowered with grace, softly kind, just one taste. Lowered with grace, sharing tea or tears, just one taste, dissolving fears. Sharing tea or tears, delicate eyes, dissolving fears, washed, lucid, and wise. Delicate eyes, changing hue, washed, lucid, and wise, wabi-sabi eyes. Why should it be water, earth, and not some other way. Why should it be fire, air, and not some other way? Why should it be this table of elements and not some others? Why should it be arms and legs and not something else? Why should it be galaxies and stars and not something else entirely? Why should it be fractals and spirals and not some other designs? Why should it be flowers and not some other fragrant gift? Why should it be me and not someone else? Why should you be here and not someplace else? Why should it be now and not some other time? Why should it be over so quickly? And why did it begin like it did? Do we have to climb mountains just because they're there? Do we really need to learn all that stuff? Do we ever really know anything at all? If not, then why not? That's the question.
I started improvising vocally with some of these, so you're going to get a couple of that. You never know what they're going to sound like, though. It's called improv. So back to the book, and more questions. These are called untimely questions. What is going on here? Is creative living a liability? Why couldn't Plath resolve the daddy issue? Why couldn't Van Gogh sell a painting? Why box the ears of a boy whose name is Beethoven, or any boy for that matter? Why a vocal hemorrhage for Caruso? What is going on here? Why would Isadora be strangled by her scarf? Why should Fritz Wunderlich trip on shoelaces and tumble the marble stairs? Why couldn't Schumann compose his way to health? Why walk into the sea, Virginia? What is going on here? Why a beautiful actress decapitated? Why couldn't Michael learn to sleep? Why didn't rehab work for Whitney and countless others? Why gun down Lennon in his prime? And why were Schubert and Mozart dead by 33? And Keats by 26. Why? What? What is going on here? Perhaps when the creative life is unacknowledged, unappreciated, or manipulated for profit, the container becomes a pressure cooker of obsession with yet more success, more love, envy, comparison, and looking good. The body rebels, the mind fractures. Or perhaps, we will never know. This is a short poem that I offer my apologies to Dylan Thomas. I hope to go gentle into that good night and gracefully dance with the dying light. I hope to go gentle into that good night and gracefully dance with the dying light. And if I rage, forgive me, for my poor heart has tried to untie the attachments of blind love and hunger. I have tried by turning towards the quiet seat and the practice of turning with patient hands with silent tongue, with open eyes, sitting and sitting, turning and turning towards silence, turning and turning towards silence. Yes, I hope to go gentle into that good night, and I hope to go gentle into this good life, be it glorious day or darkest night.
Many of you here knew my husband, and in 1998, when he passed, for a few months, this experience that I'm writing about right now actually happened to me many times, and it lasted about 3 or 4 months. It started with my feet. They were like yours. My eyes were closed, but I knew exactly how your feet felt to you. Then the hands. My fingers grew thicker. My hands and forearms heavier. They were yours. For several months after you left, the sensation of you was literal in me. At first frightening, then a welcome gift. You came in feet first. Then legs, knees, hips, trunk, all were you. A curious communion and unique. In your company, I was comforted. I found no explanation in the books on grief, but we had joked about a signal or a sign. This was better than something falling off the shelf. This was better than anything we could have imagined. Thank you. So I really, you kind of get the drift here. I don't think we know much about what's going on in this life. Why we're here, one of my great mentors, who recently died actually in April, Emily Conrad, said that we could be just some kind of yeast or food for some alien being somewhere. You know, we don't know. What do we know? She would always say, what do we know? So that was the sort of genesis for the poem that is the poem in the beginning of the end of this book that has the title and the section called Soma Song. And it took about 8 months to write. We know the body's very intelligent, but I think you'll get it after. The medical people here already know this, but I think you'll realize how utterly brilliant this body is, and I learned a lot in writing it. Soma Song. What is this body with its hills and gullies, with its smooth plains and sudden peaks, its grassy meadows by flowing creek, its forest growth and deep caverns? What is this scent of hay, this buzz of cricket and bee, this drum pulse and electric current? What is this round mass, this rotating moon, moving through an invisible orbit? What galactic arms sending and extending into air pools of shapely space? What legs of strength moving across the earth in circles and spirals of sparkle and flash? What voices whisper secret delights and eternal unending joys? What is this body that follows God around through the heavens like a faithful dog, nipping at the master's heels, angling for a rub or a bone to chew in holy communion with the scent of the flesh still fresh? What is this body ritual of wafer, candle, bell, and wand? this nightly incantation of love chant, sleep, and the white dreams of mystery. What is this body whose shadow can be projected onto the walls of the house, dancing concert of bright and dark, focus and blur, design and change? What is this play, this river, this vibration of atomic and Adamic origins, folding and unfolding forever and ever? Atman breath of inspiration, pranayama and pranams to all beings whose breath, whose eating and resting, whose making and undoing, whose time and whose ghosts, whose pleasures and terrors, whose earth is its coffin, whose earth is their ovum, whose earth is their breast, whose earth is their fire, whose earth is their food. What is this earth, this body? What is this spilling of ripe flesh, red and sweet tomato globe of desire and choosing the same bite over and over for eons, sucking, drinking, tasting, swallowing, creating flesh, destroying flesh, this living body dying daily, this cup of bitter tea, just this. What is this? What wondrous love is this, O my body, O my soul? What wondrously woven basketry, with tattoo skin patterns, carrying forward the story and symbol of a culture, warp and weft neatly balanced to dissolve itself and recreate itself over and over again according to ancient instructions within the chromosomes. What wondrous love is this? What wondrous pantry, pharmacy, nursery, and garden of earthly delights? What hot tropical vacation destination? What cruise ship of adventure? What wondrous container, completion, return, and home? What wondrous creation where information flows on a heartbeat, in a word, a touch, or in a glance? Wondrous indeed, wondrous in seed, salt, lymph, bile, and blood. Wondrous heart, most marvelous pump and primal throb of excitation, responding immediately to the slightest and smallest impulse. Wondrous leafy bean tree lungs, reversing, transferring, and exchanging elements on the crusts of the next inhale. Wondrous pancreas, thin fish swimming at the center, nearly invisible, bowing servant of sweetness and delicacy. Wondrous liver that lets us live. Wondrous kidney that discriminates and filters. Wondrous marrow factory nestled within the honeycomb of bone. Wondrous water, protein, fat, enzymes, collagen, gases, and glycogen. Wondrous tubules, glands, teeth, and sinew. Wondrous hair, skin, lip, and finger. Wondrous walnut cap of brain tunnels and secretions, lubricating synapses and allowing movement in a millionth of a second. Wondrous nail, nose, and knee. Wondrous larynx, tongue, and hand. Wondrous serpentine intestine, and all the sacs that build, move, and break down all the livelong grocery list of fuel and foolishness that we consumptives consume. Wondrous fibroblast fibers, knitted scarf of connective tissue that wraps and structures us with the tensile strength of steel. Wondrous white reserve guard cells, loaded with antigen ammunition, power proteins that protect the nation. Wondrous chorus line of dancing cochlear cells, legs high-kicking to the beat of airwaves, rubbing electricity into musical Morse code. Wondrous egg cell, blazing sun of 1,000 rays and over-easy juiciness. Wondrous womb, of warmth, fluids, and rest. The remedy for all illness is the same: warmth, fluids, and rest. For be it womb or cocoon, sack, bed, or pouch, we are graced with rest and quietude, our birthright and first crib with built-in surround sound. What wondrous love is this? Be it for the intelligence of genetic organization, be it for the uniqueness of a thumbprint, be it for the chemical reactor in the mitochondria, for these I rejoice and rejoice again. Be it for the suicidal missions and cellular cannibalisms that occur daily as divisions, cycles, mitosis, regeneration, shuffling, and turnover, for these I rejoice and rejoice again. Be it for a state-of-the-art structure, plumbing, temperature regulation, leaning towards solar, interior furnishings and decor, entertainment center, trash disposal system, and World Wide Web grid hookup, for this body, like any worthy home, I rejoice and rejoice again. I rejoice in all 206 bones, strong enough to support their weight in tons. I rejoice in the 29 vertebrae and spinal alignment, movers and stabilizers, all caressing a fine filament that coordinates more information each day than all the telephone systems of the world. I rejoice in neural linkages with 50,000 dendrites just between two cells. I rejoice in the 3-pound brain with 100 billion nerve cells packed in like canned beans. I rejoice in all 28 bones of the foot, including miraculous talus, tarsals, tibia, and toes, tiny weightlifters of renown and decoration. I rejoice in the 30-foot laboratory and recycling plant that turns food into energy for poetry. I rejoice in our watery environment and the 100 miles of blood vessels in the kidneys, feeding a million tiny filters, 2 pints a minute. And I rejoice in the 6 million red blood cells contained in just a 1/2 ounce of blood. I rejoice in the 24,000 breaths we take each and every day, moving over 400 cubic feet of air through millions of tiny sacs in the lungs. I rejoice in vibrating vocal folds, paired hummingbird wings of the throat, singing praises to the day. I rejoice in swimming sperm, clustered 200 million strong, a tadpole navy, all dressed up and bursting with a plan. I rejoice in the embryonic 8-celled blackberry that we all once were before growing to infancy. I rejoice in the miniature hammers, harps, and balancing stones inside the ear, giving us symphonies and an upright orientation. And I rejoice in the breadloaf maze that is the optic nerve, the corneal striations and retinal roadmap of our open, amazed eyes that bring light into this body, that let us see clearly this somatic starship of flesh and translucence spinning through space, yet completely and utterly and always at home. Wait till somebody nods off. No fact checkers? All right.
Hey, fibroblast.
I just want to focus a little bit more on the eyes. And I'm going to finish with two poems that focus on the eyes and the hands. This is called Eye Contact. The black hole at the center of galaxies is reflected perfectly at the center of our eyes. Diving into this blackness, we enter the mystery of seeing. A kaleidoscope of colors, the limbic iris swirls around the dark gate, which grows larger as it softens, swallowing more and even more reality. Yet somewhere beyond, within, a new world is born. From a dilating universal cervix, perfect circle of ebony light, singular identical point, uniting all mankind. The pupil is schooled in the disciplines of illumination, recording time's presence in memory, yet never fixing the moment nor stealing the soul's movement in the beautiful lie of an ordinary camera. Turn now and gaze for the next half minute into someone's eyes. Dive into this blackness, enter the mystery at the center of seeing. The idea of applause always struck me as interesting. Why we do that, you know, they should do it, I guess. Seals do it, but I just was taking a look at this universal gesture and thinking, well, I wonder how this developed. So this is two hands clapping. And you're going to help me, I hope. At the end of this poem, there's three times when I want to see if the musicians and everybody in this group can kind of clap in unison. So I'm going to go like this, and when the point of my finger reaches that, everybody can go boom together. Let's just practice, okay? Whoa, pretty good. Let's try it again. Amazing. Okay. When did applause begin? A plausible explanation may be that early man observed primates as they excitedly beat their chests. Perhaps we learned from them. Two thumps for yes, one thump for no. Perhaps we added the hands, clapping vigorously together, appreciating, yes, yes, a tasty bone broth, or the story of a well-executed hunt. And surely it was useful to discover that predators scurried away from the sharp, sudden thunder of clapping. Around the campfire, songs of call and answer may well have included hands, bones, or stones. With the aid of a rich brew, our strict leaders exploded into a riotous, rhythmic finale. The light applause of leaves in the winter winds. The secret games of children clap-talking their invented patterns. A concert of applause was carried by hand around the world, rotating like clouds. We were conceived in appreciation, the soft clap of sperm and egg connecting. The union of right hand female with the left hand male. It's the other way around. The union of right hand male with the left hand female. You can do better than me here. The right hand of Jesus says, love one another. The left hand of Jesus says, there is no death. The right hand of Buddha says, everything is interconnected. The left hand of Buddha says, nothing is permanent. The right hand of your father says, get a job. The left hand of your mother says, eat your soup. What is the sound of two hands clapping? Put your own right hand together with your left hand, applaud yourself, and hear what you have to say. Well, I made it within 4 minutes of my time, so we can have a little bit. If you have any comments or questions or just want to speak, we can have a little dialogue or something. There won't be too many book sales, I don't think, tonight, because everybody has a book.
When did you start writing poetry?
I started writing poetry in when I was about 15, and my first poem was about a girl dying of leukemia or something, but I've always written, and then I stopped for a long time when I was studying art and music, and then it all came back in the 90s when everybody was getting sick, and I was, they would just pop in, I didn't, think I would be writing poetry again, but it was kind of a way to stay sane.
You're also painting too.
Yeah, that helped me stay sane. but being in where I am, I've been writing more and more and more, and there's a lot of literary energy, and I've been reading in different places, and so that kind of keeps you stimulated to write. I'm working on I never thought I'd write a memoir, but I'm writing sort of a funny, oblique, way of looking at the horrors of the past. Yeah.
So do you write your own songs also?
My what?
Own songs.
You mean the singing I did tonight?
Or other songs that you play with instruments?
I mean, I used to, that's what I did in the 70s and 80s. I wrote 200 songs and choral pieces. But then, again, at 1990, it's kind of like, I'm done with that. I never want to write another little black spot on a piece of staff paper, ever. And so I started, just in the last few years, doing much more with improv. And doing some of the poems in an improvisatory way in a couple of concert series up in Tuolumne County, and they, I go in with absolutely no idea what I'm going to play on this big grand piano for this huge audience, and I just but it's inner work. It's really a good way to grow by forcing yourself to do something without any kind of mental stuff going on. Yeah. So, but no, it's all, I have an idea, because I just sang these the other night. But I don't know. I find that the less I know, the better off I am. So.
But your voice is so beautiful.
Thank you.
I found myself wanting to hear it more.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you set it down, then it's a song, and then so I'm trying
not
to keep
set it,
down,
but just hear more.
Yeah. But I mean, if I were to write songs again, I'd be, I don't know, going backwards, I think.
Yeah.
So I just don't want to set anything in stone. Yeah, thank you.
How did you get from here to the desert?
To what?
To the desert.
I'm in Sonora. Everybody, I first moved there, everybody thought I was moving to Mexico. There's a Sonoran desert there, which is huge, and, New Mexico. But I'm in the town of Sonora, which is in Tuolumne County in the foothills.
Uh-huh.
Just an hour north of, or west, east of Modesto. Mm-hmm. So I'm not in the desert,
okay.
Really. It felt like the desert the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But
how did you get there then? Were you in?
Painfully and slowly. Actually, it was Fran. Fran got me there. I was going to move to Arizona. And why don't you come check out Sonora, which I thought was up in Chico somewhere. I had no idea where it was. But
well, you said you wanted red earth.
Did I?
You were looking for red earth, and then I just, because I have family there, I knew there was red earth.
But it was green when we went there the first time. It was April, and I went, this reminds me of Pennsylvania where I grew up. So it's nice and green now, so you all have a open invitation to come visit me.
I love the last one.
The clapping.
It's fun.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's fun. It was thought provoking. It was a nice smile.
Mm-hmm. It's fun to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think your stuff is always, for me, thought provoking. Like one of the ones about the how come this mm-hmm. person and that person. I'd mentioned, I think it was the same year I thought, how come Dave Dravecki would lose his arm to cancer as he pitched right in front of our eyes mm-hmm. and watched it break? How come that same year Mary Wilson of the Supremes would lose her? And you always seem to get what I'm thinking, you know. Mm-hmm. And the one about the, you were saying, well, I hope I get my biology right, you know. It reminds me that when I was a student learning to read an EKG.
At the what?
An EKG, you know, mm-hmm. the electrocardiogram. Yeah, yeah. You uh-huh. see what it looks mm-hmm. like. It's got the little mm-hmm. wave and the book. And I was speaking with other fellow students, and I asked, can you read music? And I noticed the staff with the little beats. If you can learn to read music, you can learn to read an EKG, because it is the music of the heart. Mm-hmm. It's just yeah. a different, it's not a...
A different notation.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Just as I was taught many years ago an obsolete thing called shorthand. it's a language you write down, you hear it, but it's not the language. It's what you're Greg or Pittman or whatever. Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. it's shorthand. It's a language. It's a written language. And the same thing mm-hmm. with music mm-hmm. or with the EKG.
I think I saw some on PBS a few weeks ago that somebody is actually taking those medical graphs, and putting a certain note to each spot and making them, and then they're different colors too, so they're using color as well as sound and making like a visual as well as a sonar kind of depiction.
Because when you see that, you can see exactly what the heart says
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and the rhythm it has and the pace it has.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm very much inspired by it.
Yeah, it's a graphical representation of energy. Right, mm-hmm. you've got the beating of a heart, electrical activity of a heart, and as you so eloquently put it, as sound travels through the cochlea, and you know, the way the hair-like cilia bend and waves in that fluid trigger a nerve impulse. Mm-hmm. So it's a very apt.
Yeah,
and how fortunate we are as humans to enjoy it and to be able to express it. Maybe mm-hmm. other animals enjoy it too, but they don't get to write down a paper.
We don't know exactly.
Well, my dog is clever, but he his vocabulary is limited.
A long time ago, a brain researcher in a workshop I was in that had nothing to do with brain research, she said, she described all these things that were going on in a millionth of a second in the brain. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? Mm-hmm. I mean, I can't even conceive of a millionth of a second, let alone what all's going on. And the same with the heart. It's like how sensitive to the slightest thought or scent in the air.
Imagine if you actually had to run all that stuff.
Have you what?
I said, imagine if you actually had to run all that stuff.
It was under your control.
It's all done for
you. Oh! That's a whole other topic. I think something's running it.
I think that your poem, Selma Song, I remember reading it when you first sent the email to me.
Mm-hmm.
And hearing you read it is like a whole other.
It's completely different.
I mean, it should be in the middle of, like, in the beginning, I mean, of, like, medical journals or something. I would think, because, you know, when you're studying medicine, it's just so mm-hmm. technical, but to see mm-hmm. it in that beauty and in that poetry mm-hmm. just makes you, you know. It made me think of that song, you know, What Wondrous Love Is This?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
well, that's what you were referencing.
That's what I was referencing.
It's a shake note.
Well, I did read that poem at the end of a psychosynthesis symposium, and it was perfect because they mm-hmm. were dealing with all these connective things that were going on in terms of a creative impulse and the body, and then this was the ending, and it was like. Yeah. it It's a little bit dated because it has this reference to the telephone systems of the world, and I was reading it tonight and going, wait a minute, that's a little dated already. You know, we're going so... I still use a telephone.
I think everybody here knows how to dial.
Wait a minute.
We never knew it.
Just talk to my phone, hello. It's the only thing I can talk to in the world that will actually do what I tell it to.
It does?
Although I just was hearing about the cars that are coming out. They had this on NPR today, my drive in, about they're going to have in a few years cars that you don't touch.
Right,
so you can just party down and the car drives itself and no car thing. That's really scary.
No, it's wonderfully reassuring.
You think?
They'll make many fewer mistakes than we do. Probably. They won't get drunk or get tired or go to sleep or die at the wheel.
Or get distracted.
Yeah, believe me, spending enough time doing any medicine at all, thank God people will stop driving.
Yeah.
if we're lucky, they'll outlaw us.
Okay.
Well, earlier I said it's a shame that we can't just take a train to Disneyland from here. Like a European crime on this side of California. We can't just get a train to Disneyland, Mike.
Thank you.
That could be another song.
That's another song.
Another song. Why can't we get a train to Disneyland?
I was also thinking of movement.
You know? I was too.
I was feeling that with you, yeah.
Because I've been working a lot improvisatory.
Have you?
Yeah. It's sort of the only way to go. And after 40 years, I've been dancing for 42 years.
Right. And we did that one little gig up in Guadalajara, which was improv, but it was improv on my part. Yeah. But, yeah.
You know, I guess that wasn't improv, what we did for the Zen Center.
The thing with the Soma song, I mean, you know, the body, I mean, I don't know, it could be done in sort of high-tech, modern, you know, movements, I guess, or so.
I know. Some of your other songs are about with Lena.
Mm-hmm. 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 Well, thank you so much for
coming
here. And Rob, turn it back over to Rob.
All right. And I turn it back over to us. Because we are the people who can put donations in that bowl, donation bowl over on the counter there. And that is how we help support our speakers and support their work. And also support this space, because we split those donations with our speakers to help maintain this space for further such events, the ones that I mentioned earlier. So, books here to be signed, and information about upcoming events over there, and the bowl, and do come back when the shelves are not in this configuration, so you can actually see some of the other stuff that we have to show you. And thank you so much for making this first event of 2015 a lovely, lovely evening.
Thank you.